Monday, February 1, the Smyrna Town hearing, public hearing is now called to order on the comprehensive plan update.
There you are.
Madam Mayor, Jen and Vince will give the presentation this evening.
Okay.
Christmas cards,
yeah, right.
I prepared a PowerPoint presentation about the process of updating the comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan is a document in text and maps. It's basically a strategic plan.
Janet, you'll need to speak into the microphone.
Or, yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
There you go.
All right. but it sets forth the jurisdiction's position on population and housing growth, the development of adjacent areas, redevelopment potential, community character, the general uses of land within the community, and critical community development and infrastructure issues. It also includes the description of the physical, demographic, and economic conditions of the town and policies, statements, goals, and planning components, which in accordance with present and future needs and the judgment of the town best promotes the health, safety, prosperity, and general public welfare of its residents. Excuse me. Every 5 years, the town needs to review and adopt its plan. In 2005, an update to the comprehensive plan was considered by the Planning and Zoning Commission and submitted to PLUS for review in September 2005. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval to Mayor and Council, where the update to the plan was approved. And once it's adopted by the town, the plan has the force of law. All plans should have some provision for input by the public. We had three public hearings, four including this evening, for public input. Back in April of 2008, a public workshop was held to give the public opportunity to review the proposed updates to the plan and give their input. Public notice for this workshop was advertised in the Sun Times on April 11, 2008, and posted at Town Hall. It was at this meeting that the Commission reviewed and recommended approval of rezoning to bring non-conforming properties zoning into compliance with the comprehensive development plan. Then in February of 2009, a public hearing was again held by the P&Z Commission. Public notice for this meeting was advertised in the Sun-Times on February 11, 2009 and posted at Town Hall. Then this past November, one additional and final public hearing was held by the Commission, as a significant amount of time had passed since the last hearing, and the Commission felt it necessary to allow citizens another opportunity for comment and input. Public notice for this meeting was again advertised in the Sun-Times, October 28, 2009, and posted at Town Hall. The Commission unanimously recommended approval of this plan to Mayor and Council. Some of the significant updates and changes to the plan consist of changes in data, such as population data analysis, housing numbers, and annexation. Other changes include the accomplishment of various goals from the previously adopted plan, as well as updates on how the town continues to work on goals yet to be achieved. Just to highlight some of the sections that have been updated, the population data and analysis. From 2006 through 2008, the town experienced a decline in issued residential certificates of occupancy. During 2006, the town issued 169 C of O's. During 2007, 160 C of O's. And during 2008, 96 C of O's were issued. For housing, the town of Smyrna issued 529 building permits for new construction between the year 2006 and 2008. Since 2006, Smyrna annexed approximately 194 acres within the defined growth area. To the south, approximately 75 acres were annexed for future residential development. To the north along the Route 13 corridor, approximately 34 acres were annexed, filling enclaves and allowing for future commercial growth. 25 acres along Duck Creek Road were annexed for future residential growth, and 42 acres to the east of Route 13 for future employment center. An additional 9 properties totaling approximately 5 acres were annexed, filling enclaves within Spruan City. Excuse me. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be considering changes to the zoning ordinance, which will include a highway corridor overlay district. The purpose of the HCOD is to enhance the image of Route 13, to provide an attractive community gateway, and to draw visitors into the historic areas of Smyrna. And they will also be examining a village center zoning district to replace the central commercial zoning district and to be more in keeping with the downtown mixed-use intention. Critical community development and infrastructure issues, review of community conditions and community development plan. The town has adopted a vacant building ordinance and vacant building registration, and probably in February, I would guess the second meeting in February, y'all will be seeing an environmental protection plan source water protection overlay zone ordinance. Economic conditions. The town has hired Rick Farrell as our economic development consultant, and he's been working on vacancy standards for vacant commercial buildings and recruitment of businesses. For implementation, the town has and continues to evaluate current codes and ordinances. A number of ordinances have been created and amended as recommended in the plan. Some examples are Appendix A, Section 619, Home Occupation, Appendix A, Section 615, Signs, Appendix A, Section 6, Subsection 1, Parking, and Chapter 18, the Annual Registration of Vacant Buildings and Registration Fees. Our next steps, obviously this public hearing, to receive final comments and input from both Mayor and Council and the public. And once the plan is approved by Mayor and Council, it will move to PLUS for review. We're hoping that'll go in March. And following the receipt and consideration of the PLUS comments, the Planning and Zoning Commission will review it one final time and recommend it to Mayor and Council for their final review and adoption of the plan. And now, public comment input from Mayor and Council.
Madam Mayor, if I may, Temple Carter, who is Chairman of the Planning and Zoning Committee, or Commission, was planning to be here this evening and is unable to do so. He did submit a statement. Let me send copies down to you. There's one page if you'll take them. Actually, I need one. No, I don't. Never mind. He asked if I would read this into the record, so I'm going to do so if that's okay with you. I received this today, February the 1st, addressed to Mayor and Council from Temple Carter, Chairman of Planning and Zoning Committee. Subject comprehensive plan update. Due to an ongoing medical problem, I will be unable to attend the meeting tonight, so I've asked the town manager, David Hugg, to read this into the minutes. As chairman of the Planning and Zoning Committee and a council member of the committee that put together the original comprehensive plan, I thought I should comment. Several years ago, the town was fortunate to hire Dave Hugg as the principal architect of, as he was the principal architect of Governor Minner's legislation to require that all towns and counties have a certified comprehensive plan and to have it updated every 5 years. The Smyrna plan was one of the first, if not the first, certified plan in the state. It was put together by a committee of planning commission members, council members, and citizens. There were workshops, meetings galore, and public hearings ad nauseum. We had public meetings with the state, with the county and the state planning office before adopting the plan. The current plan update has actually been done for some time, and we have been waiting for updated maps for our town engineer, as we do not have the in-house capability to do them. The update has been mostly fine-tuning to the original plan, updating things that have changed, such as lands that are now annexed, infrastructure that is now in place, as planned, etc. We took the time to correct some grammar and spelling as well. Part of the reason for this is that the large portion of the original plan is already annexed and zoned. With the exception of some infill sites, the only large areas non-annexed and zones are the Spruance City area and the U.S. Route 13 corridor north of Duck Creek. The U.S. 13 Route 13 area north of Duck Creek is designated as the gateway to Smyrna, with special overlay district to control the type of growth permitted. This area is considered the gateway due to traffic volumes, which are used to designate such areas. The Planning and Zoning Committee had a workshop on April 16, 2008, to discuss the plan and start work. There was a public hearing on February 18, 2009, and another public hearing on November 18, 2009. At the April 16, 2008 workshop, two people spoke. Regina Brown stated that she would like to see the facade grant program reinstated, and Quentin, that would be Quentin Schleter, would like to see absentee landlords addressed and to have it so historically significant homes cannot be torn down. At the February 18, 2009 meeting, the Picketts were concerned about the zoning of their property. The discussion eventually led to a village concept plan that was added as an overlay to the Central Commercial District. At the November 18, 2009 meeting, no one showed up. It should also be noted that the mayor and no council members attended any of these meetings. Once an area has been annexed and zoned, any arbitrary changes to the zoning will almost certainly lead to an expensive lawsuit for damages. Most of these areas have extensive engineering done as part of the annexation process. Also, any changes to the plan must also be submitted to the State Planning Office and approved by the PLUS Committee before they can be incorporated into the plan. So that is a request. I would also like to acknowledge that David Edgel from the Office of State Planning Coordination is here. David is our county liaison person for planning and zoning matters and someone we work with and have worked with for a long period of time. So thank you, David, for coming.
Okay. Would anyone from the public like to come to the microphone, give your name and address, and speak on the comprehensive plan?
Good evening. Malay Munir, 41 South Main Street. I'd like to know when the maps for the plan will be available to the public, and when would this normally have been out? Was it 2 years ago? Or I know it's been a long wait. We've been asking since last year. Mr. Hugg, when would the maps be available to us?
They're available now. We received the updates from KCI, and there's a few kind of, I guess, typos on their end. Some of the maps didn't come out very clear. I'm sure Mayor and Council noticed some of them look like they're unreadable. So we have to get that resolved with them, but we have them now.
Okay, asking, what's the time frame? Because I've already gotten unreadable maps. When will the readable maps be available?
As soon as KCI can do the updates. And I was in... No, it shouldn't take that long. I would guess.
Okay. Could you give me a call?
When they're available?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address council on the comprehensive plan?
Madam Mayor, the process... Actually, David, do you want to maybe elaborate? The process is that this document now goes to the PLUS review process. PLUS is an organization of state agencies and other reviewers who will review it in the context of not only the state planning requirements as set forth in the Delaware Code, but also the various plans with which we have to coordinate with DLDOT, DENREC, the Department of Housing, et cetera. And then following that review and depending on what comments and issues they bring up, we may have to go through some negotiations and revisions of the plan. Do you want to elaborate on that at all, David? Do you want to say anything? It's up to you. Okay.
Hey, good evening. Again, I'm David Edgel, the Office of State Planning Coordination, and Mr. Hugg is correct. Process from here is once the town council were to approve the plan to send through the PLUS process, it would come through our one of our monthly meetings. The application deadlines are the first working day of each month. So I think Janet and I have talked, and we're thinking of earliest probably the March meeting. PLUS is, in fact, a group of state agency reviewers from each of the relevant state agencies. The most active are DENREC, DLDOT, Department of Agriculture, State Housing Authority. The Historic and Cultural Preservation folks are also active, the State Fire Marshal. They will review your plan, as will I. Our review will be sort of multifaceted. We'll certainly make sure it meets all the criteria that are requirements of the Delaware Code, and also look at all the various plans and policies of the state agencies, which are represented, on the PLUS committee. We also look at it in relationship to our strategies for state policies and spending, which is our state level sort of policies for investment and spending document, which we'll get back to a series of comments that will be sort of in two categories. The first category are certification items. Those are items that we feel will have to be addressed in order for the governor to consider certification of the plan. And then there will most likely be a series of recommendations, which will be recommendations from the various agencies on how to improve the plan. And oftentimes we do get recommendations about ordinances or other things you might do to implement the plan based on that agency's area of expertise. After those are forwarded to you in a letter, to the city through probably Ms. Vince, it'll be up to the city to address any of the certification items. And, of course, anything that's a recommendation that you wish to address, you're certainly welcome to do so. We encourage it. And then you reconsider the plan. And once you adopt that plan, we prepare a report, and it goes to the governor for a certification of the plan. And what that certification means is that the plan is consistent with the requirements of Delaware Code, because there are some specifications of what should be in there. And I think Janet's PowerPoint did a good job of listing those right straight from the Delaware Code.
And Mr. Edgel, I'm sorry.
Sure.
We need to start the council meeting, so stay where you are. What we usually do is we're going to close the public hearing, we're going to open the council meeting, and then if you would please continue.
Okay, I'm almost done.
Okay, we'll stay right
we're
there.
Close.
Okay. Monday, February 1, the Smyrna Town Council meeting is now called to order. Please rise for a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please remain standing for a moment of silence. Thank you. The public hearing for the comprehensive plan will continue. Mr. Edgel, thank you.
Okay, I was just about ready to wrap up, and I'm just describing that, you know, once the plan does go to the governor with our report for certification, his signature means the plan is certified in accordance with some criteria of the Delaware Code. And that means the plan itself is consistent with the requirements in the Delaware Code, and also that it's consistent with the policies embodied in our strategies for state policies and spending, and that we will work as a partner with the town to implement that plan to the extent that we're able to, given whatever strategies and goals and implementation items that you have, that we can be a partnership with you. So that's a summary of the process. The timing of that process, again, it has a lot to do with, you know, how long the changes take and sort of what type of changes are necessary, if there are any. And we won't know that certainly until we have a chance to read and review your plan, which we look forward to doing whenever it, you know, was presented to us for that. And I've been working with Mrs. Vince and with the application forms and all those materials, and certainly I'm at your service to help with any of those issues that do arise. So they both Janet and Mr. Hug have my number and can call me if there's any questions, and certainly answer any questions you have this evening if any were to come up. So thank you.
Can you stay for a second?
Sure.
Does council have any questions for Mr. Edgell?
I have one for Janet.
Bless you.
Okay. Janet, looking at the maps that you did send out to us, and I agree with you, there's a lot of information to get into an 8.5 by 11 sheet. Is there any way that we can receive them as a PDF that can be done? We can look at them in a little more detail?
I'm sure that there is.
I'm sure it's somewhere that these are existing
electronically. I'm sure that there is. I may have to work with KCI because right now our maps are on their server, and you need a passcode to get in. But I'm sure I can get permission from them or have them send them to me on a disk that I can send them out to you.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The last time we updated the comprehensive plan and adopted the plan and the map set, we also had them printed out in the large size that you've probably seen downstairs from time to time in the basement, and had a set that size downstairs and then a half size set available in the library, and we can do the same thing this time when we have a final or essentially close to final set of maps.
Yeah, I was just thinking in the interest of looking at them from detail and of the ecology, you know, with all the paper that we amass, that this would be nicer.
Probably would.
Thank you.
Unless I missed it, I know the comprehensive plan before had wording in it that said that it was to be used as a guide. I know there was a point in time years ago, people used to tell me that because of the comprehensive plan, we'd have to do this, and because of the comprehensive plan, we have to do that. But my understanding of it was that it is a guide.
Got
away too early.
Yeah,
I sat down too soon. Actually, the comprehensive plan does have the force of law once you adopt it. And what that means depends on how the plan is written. And you know, we work with the plans from all the local jurisdictions. There are 60 in the state of Delaware, 3 counties and 57 towns. Each of them writes their plans in a different way. In a very simplistic manner, if your comprehensive plan calls for an area to be residential, the Delaware Code would sort of infer that you would need to zone that for residential, and if it's developed, it would be developed as residential, not as commercial, not as an airport, not as a factory, but as residential. And that's a very simplistic way to look at it, but there are so many permutations of how your plan can be written and how the maps can be done that it really does depend on your individual plan and your goals and your policies. It is, in essence, a policy guide for many towns and many communities, but there are aspects of it that where that force of law aspect does come into play. So without, if you have any more detailed questions, I could sort of take a stab at an answer, but that's about the best I can do in general.
I have a question, but maybe I'll ask you later.
Okay. Like me to stay, or?
Is there any other questions for Mr. Edgell? You're clear.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, if there's no other questions or comments for the comprehensive plan, we will close the public hearing and we will open the council meeting.
Councilman Evans.
Here.
Councilwoman White.
Here.
Councilman DeFeo.
Here.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Here.
Councilman Rayner.
Here.
Councilman Riddle.
Here.
Councilman Thornton.
Here.
Are there any additions or deletions to the published agenda?
Madam Mayor, before you go forward, just so everybody knows, Barrett Edwards is acting on behalf of Mr. J. Work this evening, so in his first official capacity as our solicitor, I guess, at sitting up at the table. So.
Be nice.
Welcome. Okay. Are there any other comments, additions, or deletions to the published agenda? Is there a motion to accept?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion accepted. Are there any additions or deletions to the minutes in our packet from January 4th?
Yeah, I was going to say you don't have January 19th yet.
Is there a motion? Any additions or deletions? I'm sorry. Nope. Is there a motion to accept?
So moved.
Second?
Second. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion accepted. Comments, reports from presiding officer. In your packet, there is a letter and a resolution from the city of Dover. They have proposed a resolution, and the resolution is for the adoption of local service function budget for Kent County. And what it's about is they feel that there's duplication in our taxes, in the Kent County taxes, that we're being charged for things by Kent County that we also pay in the municipality taxes. So they've proposed a resolution to have these taxes eliminated from the Kent County side. And they're asking us as a municipality to join in with a resolution. And this will be presented in the our next packet. It'll be on the agenda for the next meeting.
Our own resolution?
Yes.
Supporting it.
Okay. Well, tonight's your first night. Would you like to say anything?
Yeah, Terry actually wanted, first off, to ask you excuse him. He has a conflict with another meeting in another town tonight, so he's busy elsewhere. He wanted me to mention that we met this past week with Mr. Hug and reviewed some of the pending files that we have, just closing out, making sure that we're on top of everything, and also that our office is working forward with the monitions that are pending right now that you had asked that we had done. That's all.
Thank you. Chief Baldwin?
No report this evening, Madam Mayor.
Mr. Hug?
Thank you. You have my report in your packet. You also have a couple of other items that I believe are in your packet. One, the financial or the bank account statements, and a small discussion from Gary about the rainy day fund, which has reached or actually exceeded its $3 million statutory limit. And the other item that I do want to ask quickly about, I gave you in your packet a draft of a letter to Senator Ennis and Representative Carson. As you know, the General Assembly is back in session, and one of the things that I try and do on behalf of the community and also for the League of Local Governments is track legislation that may have an impact on local governments. Sometimes these things are rather subtle. You don't find them until you start sort of digging through the details of legislation. There's a bill that was introduced last year, House Bill 26, with a House amendment that would basically clean up the use of the writ of monition, that's a sheriff sale process, for local governments, and the League and those of us that reviewed it had no problem with that bill or the amendment. Unfortunately, a Senate amendment was recently offered, and the Senate amendment would prohibit the use of munitions process for any lien less than $10,000. So we would be prohibited by law from using the sheriff's sale process to collect the delinquent taxes and other amounts owed the town. As you probably are well aware, there were 40 priority accounts that we've been working on. We're probably down to a third of that now, but none of them exceeded $10,000. And this would have effectively eliminated our ability to collect a tremendous amount of property taxes and other liens that are due the town, and for which the threat of a sheriff's sale, if not the actual process, has been enough in most cases to get folks to make payments on their accounts. I had written a letter, which I was going to make sure that council was okay with my sending, to Senator Ennis and Representative Carson, expressing our opposition to Senate Amendment 1 to House Bill 26. And just wanted to be sure that council was okay with my doing that.
Do you want us to vote?
Would
it make a difference if we sent it from council rather than
the town manager? Send it from council? I mean, you could, or send it over the mayor's signature. Typically, what we have done is on these kinds of matters, unless it's been a really significant issue, the council has instructed me to send a letter, but I certainly could be signed by the mayor would be appropriate as well. And I guess maybe in retrospect, a simple aye motion, yes or no, might be helpful. It could at least report in the letter then that it was approved by council tonight.
So we're going to go ahead and do you want a motion?
Yeah, that might be cleaner.
Okay. Is there a motion to accept the letter to Senator Ennis and Representative Carson concerning House Bill Number 26 with HA1 and SA1?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion accepted.
Thank you. I believe that's all that I want to bring to your attention.
Okay.
Questions?
Committee reports. I think the only committee met last week was the Long Range Planning Committee. And with the holiday and the new year, our meeting was the last Thursday of the month. So with Thanksgiving and Christmas, we didn't have meetings in November and December. So this was our first meeting. And we just kind of went over everything. Janet was there to update us on some questions and information we had left with her. Grant Pritchard from Planning and Inspections was there to give us additional information. Mr. Hogg gave us some additional information. So we're planning on moving forward. Is there any other committees?
The Utility Committee will meet Wednesday night at 5. The Finance Committee meets next Tuesday at 5:30. Is that the... Okay, at 5:30. And the Personnel Committee meets next Wednesday at 5 o'clock.
Business development meets
Thursday morning at 8:30. I knew I'd missed one.
Public safety at 5 o'clock Thursday.
Okay. This coming Thursday?
Yes.
Okay.
Next Thursday.
Okay.
Next week.
Okay. Just an aside, Madam Mayor, if I could. As Mr. Hugg said, the Public Utility the Utility Committee is meeting on Wednesday. And to the folks here, I really, and whether it's public safety or whichever one, really would like to see citizens there. Up here you see us talking and voting and making motions on items that come up from those committee meetings. And I've said it before, that's where 99% of the work's done. All the input comes in at that point. And it's a shame we don't get that attendance that we see here. And I really, once again, I implore you folks to come and take part in that, because that's where the business is done. So that's where the planning happens.
There's also an opportunity at the committee meetings, if you want to speak longer than 3 minutes, it's up to the chairman of the committee, but in most committees you have a little bit longer than 3 minutes to speak. Okay. This portion of the meeting we'd like to open to our visitors. If you would step to the microphone and give your name and address, it is being recorded. And each person is allowed 3 minutes. I know you're all going to be so excited. I found my timer. I lost it the last couple meetings. So it is digital, and I put it up here, and it gives you a chance to see when it is counting down so that you know when you need to wrap your speech up. So would anyone like to address council?
I have a question. Is the 3 minutes separate from being part of the agenda?
Yes, you're separate. Your committee is separate.
That will be after the open 3 minutes. Okay. All right. Then please pass these around. I'm standing tonight on behalf of the Smyrna Citizens Coalition, actually on behalf of all our citizens, and I have just a quick comment about the munitions topic with this gentleman over here, about wrapping up munitions topics. There is a munitions sale topic involving the Taggart building that I hope is not closed, because there's going to be some paperwork coming down the pike about that. First of all, I'd like to introduce a new resident to Smyrna, Ron Menninger, who's a roommate, a former Vietnam vet, recipient of two Purple Hearts. He's also a member of SCC and DCAP, sitting back here. He's a former entrepreneur, and he's experienced in oration and public presentations. Ron and I wish to thank our Smyrna Fire Department for their assistance on Saturday evening with a chimney fire at 41 South Main. They did an outstanding job in responding quickly and acting in a professional and conscientious manner. Words cannot describe our sincere appreciation. We're going to be baking lots of cookies and bread for them. Chief Baldwin, I'm going to direct the rest of the paperwork here that we've been passed around to you. It's sort of a wrap-up of our previous town meeting on January 19th. We'd like to again direct some concerns and comments to our chief. Number one, and this is in reference to the article in the Delaware State News, after we presented our four-point wish list. Number one, Chief, while surveillance cameras may be effective, they're difficult to justify in today's economy. This was a statement you made to the press. Our question, has the position for a new police officer been filled, Chief?
Yes.
Okay, and what is the yearly salary plus benefits? Just a rough idea.
43,000. 43?
Okay, plus benefits? Okay, full-time? Okay. Well, we had thought that if the position had not been filled, that it might make sense to consider the cost of four cameras and monitoring as a possible alternative. And also, we asked if you had conducted a financial and viability analysis regarding the installation of cameras.
Yeah.
Okay. Your comment number two, we have not experienced any concentrations of crimes that indicates cameras are needed. SCC response, the members of SCC do not agree with that statement, Chief Baldwin. Does the rest of it that I can't say go into the public record? If it's not spoken, does it go in the record since it's documented in writing?
Go into the minutes?
Into the minutes, public record.
You could request for them to...
I'm requesting, as I have in the past when it hasn't, that it please be included. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address council?
Good evening. My name is Edward Lehman, 161 Belmont Avenue. Basically, I have a couple statements to make. I attended this meeting back in December on the 27th, and was told by a member of the, someone that works for the town, that the fees had been eliminated for shutoff fees. Well, my question is, why did it just switch hands? Because the fee is no longer there for the shutoff fees, but now you have to pay an extra deposit when that comes due. If electric is scheduled for shutoff, instead of having a $50 fee, now you have to add it to a deposit for the electric. And the problem is, when you have organizations in the town that are trying to help these people in rough times, and there's three that I know of personally. One is Catholic Charities. The other is the Smyrna Ministry of the churches in this town, and also St. Polycarp's, which is part of St. Paul Vincent de Paul Society. Now, these people are trying to help these people pay their bills, and we also have to pay that extra $50 fee for a deposit towards your electric bill because they think that these people are going to have a problem again. Possibly they are going to have a problem again, but these times are tough. But I cannot see why these organizations that are trying to help the public pay their bill. Now, if we have to pay a $50 fee each time, this every three or four times we have to pay that, that eliminates us from helping someone else in need. I think it's totally uncalled for, personally. And I would love to see what we have to do to get a motion to change this. I don't know what I have to do. I'm asking council for a complete answer on it. My other point is you have good standing ordinance that you're considering, but you're willing to give builders a break, but you're not willing to give the people that live here a break in this town. I'm sorry, but to me that's totally ridiculous. And my other question would be, I'm not complaining about the people that work in the office downstairs or anything like that, because they have treated me very courteously. Because last time I was here, they didn't even know there was a possibility of a change in that when we came in to pay a bill for someone. Okay, I'm not looking for this for myself. I'm looking so we can help people in this town that are really in need. My main question tonight, though, do we have any standards that this town lives by? I would really like to know if there's any principles or values this town goes by. Because right now, I can't seem to find any. Thank you for letting me share.
Mr. Lehman, if I may, your question regarding the deposits and things like that, I would suggest that you go to the utility committee with your concerns, because that's where all that work would be done when it was changed last time. We spent some time, maybe 2 years ago or last year even, the utility committee spent time changing how it was done. I would suggest you take it to them, and they'll start. It'll start there.
I agree with you there 100%, but my point is, to me, when that person came up and spoke, that was deceitful. When they said it had been eliminated, basically all it did is switch hands.
I believe what he spoke about, I'm trying to remember back to that meeting, but I believe what he spoke about was the reconnect fee. I believe that's what he was talking about that had been eliminated, was the reconnect fee. So I'm not sure.
Well, is there a difference between a reconnect and shutoff fee?
Yes. Yes, there used to be both. And but there is a list. There is a fee schedule. And is it online, Mr. Hogg?
Yes. Well, here's the problem that day, which was one day last week, okay, when the electric was being scheduled to be turned off. We had been at that person's house, called the town from that person's house. The electric had not been shut off even yet, okay? We told them we'd begin to pay the bill, but it could not be stopped because it was in process. When we got here, the electric still had not been turned off, but we still had to pay that fee.
Mr. Lehman, can you come on Wednesday night?
I plan on being there, and I will try to speak as nice as I am tonight.
Good job.
I know you won't disappoint me.
You're doing wonderful.
You won't disappoint me, but please, if you can come.
As long as the chief's not there, I'll probably be able to do it. Thank you.
Would anyone else like to address council? Seeing no one step forward, we will close this portion of the meeting. Whoops, wait a minute. Under 7A, the Delaware Culture Asset Preservation Group wanted an opportunity to introduce themselves. I'd like to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Lehman, thank you very much. The SCC just helped another resident not have their power turned off. They had an 8-hour notice this last week. Good evening. My name is Malene Manier, 41 South Main Street, Smyrna. I'm a spokeswoman for the newly forming Delaware Cultural Asset Preservation Group. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. We've passed some information for all of you, and what I'd like to do is read what we call our manifesto. Also, I have supporting resumes, Mayor, if you care to see them. One of our members is a retired naval commander. His name is Eric Kramer, and he said to give you or anyone who would like his resume. He comes to Delaware, and he also lives in Canada, so he's got a lot on his plate. Mr. Volkamer from Frederica would have been here this evening, but he came down with flu, so I'm the one that's standing for this group. Our manifesto, the future of Belmont Hall, one of the most extraordinarily significant historic sites in the state of Delaware, home of former Governor Thomas Collins, meeting place of our General Assembly during the British invasion up the Delaware Bay, visited by such noted Delawareans as Caesar Rodney, John Dickinson, and the noted astronomer Annie Jump Cannon. So rich a history, so little time to decide its future. We come here tonight with deep concerns about a place not far from this town hall in Smyrna that has stood for hundreds of years as a magnificent and stately reminder of our past. Cloaked in such a grand and graceful gown of tall and robust trees, old and tale-telling boxwoods, it now lies vacant, poorly maintained, and forgotten by most. Belmont Hall belongs to us, the ordinary citizens of this state, and although it has been kept from us, as so many other of our historic jewels, being used at the whim of those we entrusted to care for our history and culture. We come here tonight to deliver this, our manifesto. The State of Delaware Division of Historical and Cultural Affairs, Historical Preservation Office Director Tim Slavin, and his associates within our state, our county, and our town, including our town manager, Mr. David Hug III, and all others who have and are involved in making arrangements behind closed doors for our Belmont Hall to be annexed into this town of Smyrna, Delaware. We challenge you now, as patriots of our Constitution and our history and culture, the decision regarding the annexation of this site shall not be entrusted to those who have held the keys to save our history that is now so vulnerable. It is we, the citizens who own Belmont Hall and all the other historic sites that are now left in neglected states of decay. We, as members of the newly formed Delaware Cultural Asset Preservation Group, DCAPG, are committed to assuring that this topic will be part of the upcoming election process in April 2010. We want a referendum placed on the ballot, annexation or no annexation. Belmont Hall, our future, for the people, about the people, and by the people. The Delaware Cultural Asset Preservation Group has contacted Anchorage Productions of Wilmington, Delaware, to conduct a two-phase evaluation of the Belmont Hall property, including a comprehensive condition structural report of the building, soil samplings, and analysis of the entire property, as well as a financial feasibility study. We are awaiting Director Slavin's approval to allow Mr. Howard, a noted archaeologist and engineer, to conduct this work. If the property is not annexed into the town of Smyrna, we will then base our decisions upon Mr. Rob Howard's findings and the outcome of our presentation to the State Joint Finance Committee scheduled for February 24th. Our interest in this site is forthright as ardent supporters of preserving our history, and our approach to making this a viable and successful venture for all to benefit from. It is our intent to establish a for-profit corporation, create an income stream that will be a significant ecotourism draw that can and will be shared with our town of Smyrna, Kent County, and the state of Delaware. We believe that a lease option to purchase is a common sense approach worthy of consideration, especially at a time when our local and state governments are all experiencing financial hardship. Our approach is open door, and we invite any and all to attend our upcoming meetings, including all of the media. Resumes of some of our DCAP members are available for your perusal. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Nothing? Okay. Mayor Stombaugh, I'm going to be forwarding you resumes of probably 8 to 10 of our members for your perusal. And if you feel free, if you feel that it would be helpful, you may forward them to other members of the council. Thank you very much.
Which, anything that I do receive, I forward it on to council, so it will be forwarded to council. Okay, under 8, old business, results of the public hearing reference comprehensive plan update. Mr. Huff.
The action required or recommended tonight is a motion by council to forward the comprehensive plan to the Office of State Planning Coordination for plus review. Is not a recommendation to adopt the plan at this time. That would happen after the plus review has been completed and the results are evaluated and presented to council. But I'd like to get the plus process underway because it will take a little while.
Is there a motion?
Is
there a second?
Second.
Discussion. Roll call.
Madam Mayor, if I want just one question. This document is quite extensive. It's now approaching, 80-some pages, I think. And it seems to be a layered approach to the comprehensive plan. And I guess my question is, at what point do items begin to drop off that are aged? We go back many, many years, and then we build upon that, showing what the annexations have been and so forth. And I don't have any quarrel with that. My question is, it becomes an unwieldy document at some point, and my question is, and maybe there's not a clear-cut answer, maybe Plus can answer this, but at what point do we begin to streamline that?
That's really a very good observation. Most of the comprehensive plans that I've seen and worked with have kind of followed that same format. They sort of build on top of previous work, so they do over time become kind of a history book as much as a current document. I think it's a good question. I don't have an answer, but David, maybe that's something that you and Connie could think about at least, and maybe if you have some suggestions as part of the plus process or simply as additional comments, that might be very helpful to us. Because it does, once it reaches 100 pages, it gets very unwieldy, and a lot of it, particularly a lot of the demographic material, after at least 10 years, it gets very dated and may not be all that valuable.
I'll just add that one of the ways that municipalities have streamlined these documents is through this regular update process that you're in now, where you can sort of delete the aspects of it that are no longer valid and add aspects that are new conditions that you're experiencing in your community. So having not seen the document, I can't really comment specifically on your plan as it exists now, but I think you're going through the right process to make sure it's a usable and up-to-date document.
Are you recommending then that we consolidate this before it goes for the first review?
Hold on 1 second. I'm sorry. It's being recorded. Could you give your name again?
Sure. My name is David Edgel with the Office of State Planning Coordination.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're the mayor. The question was, are we on the right path, or before this is sent to PLUS, should we send this back for consolidation then?
I can't comment on that, not having seen it.
Okay.
But I will tell you that when we review it through PLUS, we do read every word and you know, in past comprehensive plan reviews, I have recommended certain streamlining efforts for towns. I think Mr. Hugg was kind of alluding to that. You know, if we see something that's obviously something that you know, we think could be done better or more easily, we'll make that recommendation to you. And we do see all the comprehensive plans in our office from 60 local jurisdictions. So we've seen a whole variety. So we often have a lot of good insights on what other towns have done that works and what maybe they haven't done so well. And we can give you advice and comments based on that.
Councilman Thornton, were you talking about the annexations?
No, I was talking about the entire plan.
The entire plan, okay.
So he's answered my question. Okay. Thank you.
But everything would be like archived, where it would be able to be accessed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, is there any other questions? Roll call.
Councilman Rayner.
Aye.
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Councilman Thornton.
Just to be clear, we're voting to send this to Plus.
That's right.
Yes.
Right.
Aye.
Councilman Evans?
Aye.
Councilwoman White?
Aye.
Councilman DeFeo?
Aye.
Mayor
Stonebaugh? Aye. Motion accepted. 8B, second reading, ordinance number 008-09, Chapter 1, General Provisions, Section 1.14, Good Standing Ordinance.
Madam Mayor, two comments before we get into the discussion. We do have a procedure in the general code for the town that requires that ordinances, once presented, be dealt with in a relatively timely manner. So I want to remind council that if for some reason you do not approve the second reading tonight, in order not to have that time period lapse, you would have to act on it at the next council meeting in order to schedule it for a third reading. It still doesn't mean that you've adopted it, but just that we have to, and I'll mention that on the other two ordinances as we go. In your packet, you had a couple-page memo from Grant Pritchard, and then I believe you all received electronically, or in the case of Mr. Evans, in hard copy, a page and a half or so from Solicitor Edwards on the various options. As you recall, the issue before us on the good standing ordinance is the extent to which these provisions apply individually on a property-by-property basis or collectively to all properties owned by an individual or corporation in the community. And I'm sensitive to your concerns about whether one class of property owners is treated differently than another one. I would ask you to carefully consider the information that's been provided both by Mr. Pritchard and by Mr. Edwards, because there are ramifications of selecting an option that is global, if you will, that, for example, right now, and I hope, Barrett, if I start stumbling into something I shouldn't be saying on a particular property, interrupt me, please, but as you well know, there is a development in the town of Smyrna that the developer has walked away from, and we're in the middle of various legal actions to address a number of issues with that development, but the global approach, should that be the decision council makes, would have the perhaps unintended consequence of making it impossible for another home builder to come in and acquire one or two or three of those lots and initiate construction in that development. That development has water, sewer, roads, stormwater, you know, all the utilities in place. It is a buildable and developable project, but absent the payment of certain fees and taxes owed to town under the global approach, no one would be able to undertake any development activity until the owner of record, which in this case is the developer, who is not now to be found, to that matter, was resolved. So we do need to be careful that by taking an action that may in many cases seem like the right action, that we don't preclude the possibility of someone else stepping up and or the original owner themselves, for that matter, stepping up and continuing to build and develop in the community and generate the fees and revenues and taxes and utilities that we depend on. So council really does need to come to some resolution for us to be able to proceed on which way they chose to go. After the last council meeting, I talked briefly to Mr. Jaywork and Mr. Edwards about the possibility of limiting any developer concession, if you will, to only that portion of a development that was in that was an actively approved phase. For example, we have a number of projects that may be 200 or 300 units in total, but only, let's say, 10 or 15 of the lots are in a currently approved and active phase of development, and perhaps making it a requirement that any fees or taxes or anything else that was owed to us be satisfied in that phase, if not in the entire development. The difficulty with that comes right back to the case I just presented to you. And in the case of this one development, the active phase is the balance of the development. So we find ourselves back in this sort of same catch-22. And there seems to be no consistency across the state as to how other jurisdictions have dealt with this problem. I think, Barrett, I think in an earlier memo or email or discussion, you had pointed out to us that there are about an equal number of municipalities that use the global approach and an equal number of municipalities that go property by property, and a couple where it isn't quite clear.
I mean, in the research that we've done, it appears that whichever way Smyrna goes could potentially swing the vote. I mean, yeah, it's that close that, you know, there's just no clear majority, and, you know, whichever side Smyrna decides to go on could, you know, certainly affect how even it is. But you know, I think that Mr. Jaywork addressed this at the last meeting also, but, you know, from our perspective, you know, we're responsible here for making sure that you understand the ramifications of, you know, whichever path the town decides to go down. The hard part of deciding which path to go down is, you know, councils. That's why you're here, and it certainly is a difficult decision. But as Mr. Hugg has said, I mean, I don't know if Mr. Pritchard, you know, if the memo that he sent around speaks for itself, if he should perhaps address some of the things that he pointed out. But, you know, potentially by going with a global approach to this, you know, where everything has to be paid off for the developers, I mean, financially, it certainly could, you know, have negative impacts on the town in the future. It's just kind of a reality. You know, you're going to lose out transfer taxes, you know, the impact fees that come along, just future real estate taxes from the improved property. I mean, it could have, you know, negative ramifications for the town. At the same time, you know, you're balancing against basically fairness across the board. And, you know, these are both important considerations that council needs to take into account.
Mr. Pritchard is here if you want him to further elaborate, but I'll simply leave it.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. First off, I read this to not that it would actually be attached to the development, that it would be attached to the developer to prevent the developer from having a problem with one property and kind of just leaving it there and moving on to another property.
But in most cases, the developer and the property are one and the same. That is the owner of record. And in the case of this particular project we're having problems with right now, the remaining 14 lots are in the name of and owned by the developer, who is now out of business, and we're not sure where.
But isn't this, my understanding of this ordinance was to prevent anybody from moving on to a second project if they had a problem with the first project, that they wouldn't be able to move to a second project. That was my understanding of this ordinance.
The intent of the ordinance, in sort of simple terms, depending which way you approach it, is that if you are in arrears to the town of Smyrna for property taxes or other levies, that you could not get a permit under one of these schemes. You could not get an approval to conduct any additional business in the town of Smyrna until all of your outstanding debts were satisfied. So if you were in this case, the developer I'm talking about, if that developer, who does in fact owe us taxes and other costs,
if they can't take care of the first property, how are they going to move on and take care of a second property?
Well, I think the issue comes to when the developer walks in and says, okay, I would like to get a building permit to build a house on lot number 6 in XYZ subdivision. And we go through the process and say, oh, by the way, you owe us property taxes on, you know, lots 6 through 80 that you haven't paid for 2009. Under the strict interpretation, that's the end of the discussion. Till they pay all of those property taxes, they could not draw a building permit on lot number 6. Under one of the possibilities, if they were to pay up all of the obligations they owed us on lot number 6, they would be allowed to draw a building permit, using that example, for lot number 6. Under the global approach, they would not be allowed to do anything on any property anywhere in town. That's really the distinction.
And if we allowed them to build on lot number 6, then we would receive the transfer taxes and everything else that goes
right.
with it.
The
for
building, permit,
lot.
Fees, so the utility charges. Yeah, that lot would be made whole in terms of its obligations to the town of Smyrna and then allowed to proceed through the permitting process with the associated fees and transfer taxes and all the other benefits. The other lots would still be encumbered until such time as that developer or another builder came forth and said, I want to build on lot number 7, and the same scenario. Okay, you make yourself whole on lot number 7, you're allowed to finish lot number 7.
You sure? Are we in discussion here?
I think we're asking some questions. Do we need to make a motion?
Yeah, we do.
I have a sheet full.
Okay.
I have some questions, too.
How does the resolution stand? Does it stand as global?
I need somebody to make a motion.
That's where we're lost because there's two options before us. You take the gavel.
I'll make the motion. I'll make a motion that the ordinance go for global. Is there a second?
That's where he has to pay up everything, right?
Right.
I'll second that.
And now we're in discussion. Go for it.
Okay. I'd like to discuss it. I have thought both ways on this. I almost changed my mind over the weekend, but I feel that I can't do this because it's almost like discriminatory. Supposing Mr. and Mrs. Citizen here has a problem with their sewer line from the house to the street. The thing crumbles. They want to get a permit. They come into the town and say, no, you can't get that. You have to pay your taxes. So what do? They go behind a bush in the backyard or what? You know, I mean, this just isn't fair. And that's my only thing. I understand the economics of it. I was an investor myself in real estate, and I could see the other point, but in all fairness to everybody, either everybody pays the taxes or nobody pays them.
I'm agreeing with you, Bill. I'm agreeing with Councilman Rayner here. This motion here, this is too broad because you're bringing in not just contractors but the private citizen in here too. So whatever you're going to keep on the big guy, you're dumping on the small guy. And whether it's the sewers backed up, the roof leaks, whatever it is, and Mrs. Smith's on Social Security, she just saved enough to pay her taxes. Now she's got Mr. Wilson, and she's got this roof to fix. And I'm agreeing with you there, too. But, see, we also forgot the other part of this, too, which was the code violations, and you'll lump that in there, too, where I agree with that part. I want the builder to go ahead and build on lots 4, 5, and 6 if he's got code violations on 1, 2, and 3. So I agree with that part in stopping the future construction until he fixes the code violations on previous built lots, because we've seen that here in town with past contractors. So I don't want him leaving this trail of violations behind him as he continues to build. So somehow we need to separate the issue of taxes from the violations, and we need to remember the small person here, because after the contractors are gone, we're all still here.
We're left with it.
We're still here. You're here wanting to do something in your home or do something in my home, and, you know, if you don't know where you'll be tomorrow financially, you could be that person standing right there saying, I need to get my roof fixed or my sewer fixed or I pay my taxes. What do I do? And I can't do one according to the code until I do the other. Maybe.
Then there's another thing. If the builder can't afford to pay the taxes, how is he going to have the money to start building? He can't get down to Lowe's and say and get all these material on credit, you know, and then Lowe's says, oh, well, come back to me when your house is finished and you sell it and you can pay us. I mean, if the guy can't afford it now, how's he
going to
afford it?
May come in and buy that. You may come in and buy a portion of those lots, and you
can. Well, then why can't they take that money and pay the bill?
Well, he will have to. If he comes in and buys those lots, he would be responsible.
And if you did that on an individual basis, that's what would happen. If XYZ Building Company came in and said to this developer, I'm willing to take over lot number 6 and build a house on it. Under the ordinance, if it's specific, the property owner, the person who the actual developer, would have to make that lot whole in terms of all of its outstanding obligations before that builder would be able to get a building permit to build on.
Well, that should be all right, because when it's sold, we should be getting our money, and it would clear it.
Right.
Couldn't the ordinance read 2 or more lots? If you had 2 or more lots, that way we wouldn't have to. We could make an exception for the private person that Bill and Tony are worried about, because I hate to see the revenue lost.
All right, let me give you an
example. Because we want this guy to pay for 20 lots back taxes of $5,000, where he can build a house. If he pays for the one lot, build a house on that, we can get the transfer taxes, and all the taxes. That's going to total more than what he probably owes anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully, somewhere along the line, if he goes to lot number 2, we make him pay taxes on that lot, and hopefully along the line somewhere, he'll pay up on his taxes. If not, we can call that lien in any time we want to. I mean, if we think he's taking advantage of us, we can say, hey, wait a minute, this guy's just playing us for fools. Let's call the lien in. But, I understand Tony and Bill's point. I don't want to hurt the little guy either, the guy that has to put a roof on, things like that. So if we can make it, a developer that owns 2 or 3 or more lots or something like that. Because I think you're just... I think you're cutting your nose off to spite your face. You want to make money for the town, but and I'm not huggy-feely for developers, but I just think it's a common-sense approach. If you want to make money for the town, you got to develop.
I'll give you an example without giving names. Doesn't a builder owe us for, over on Sunnyside Road, it's not a pump station. Is it a pump station?
Yeah, it's a pump station.
Okay.
There is an outstanding.
Doesn't he owe us his part or a part?
There is an outstanding obligation that is probably going to be contested, but there is an outstanding obligation for some costs on a pump station.
Isn't he building houses again in a development that was shut down?
He's building 1 or 2. I think he built 2 houses in that development, which does have all of the water and sewer and other utilities, and I believe the taxes are paid on those lots, but there is an outstanding obligation on a related project. Right now, there is no...
And it's a pretty big obligation, isn't it?
It's a fairly large amount. There is no statutory prohibition right now for him walking in the door tomorrow, drawing a building permit for lot number 3, or whatever the number is, in that development, and being able to proceed. And that's really what a good standing ordinance is all about. It's to flag those kinds of things and say, wait a minute, if you are in arrears to us, there is a process of making yourself whole before you can proceed. Now, if something is being litigated or contested or whatever, that's got to be dealt with as that's got to be treated as an exception, because there are instances where there are debts owed to the town, privately and publicly, and developer, that are either in negotiations or in some kind of resolution. It's no different than a developer who owes us property taxes on a large number of totally undeveloped lots, pieces of dirt sitting out there that have no utilities, no services, and are not actively being developed at this time. And for whatever reason, there are some outstanding obligations. If the liens have been filed, even though we don't have the money right in hand, and I know this is an issue, they are subject to 1.5% per month until such time as they're satisfied or until we take them to the sheriff's sale, which
what
is what we have done on
bankrupt.
A couple as well.
Huh? What happens if they go bankrupt?
We still have the right to take the properties to sheriff's sale. So that's one of the avenues we're pursuing with this one development that the developer has. I don't know if they want bankrupt, but there's left.
I mean, when, you know, bankruptcy proceedings begin, you know, essentially, you know, they have some assets, such as the land in this instance, and municipal tax liens have priority, meaning that as soon as bankruptcy begins and they start dishing stuff out, you know, the town's tax liens are going to come ahead of everything else, so the town will get its money. It's not an issue of if, but more when than anything, and I think as Mr. Jaywork has pointed out, and as Mr. Hug just did, you know, it's basically at an 18% annual fee that the town will be accruing on that. So in addition, the town isn't losing money. You know, time value of money over waiting a couple years is actually would be getting a hefty interest rate on top of that.
Do you have any idea what your legal fees would equate to in percentage?
I can't say that.
We have a schedule. They're a couple of $100 per tax sale, something on that. Does that sound right?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, when we started addressing some of these properties that had been delinquent for some period of time, Mr. Rushi and Mr. Jaywork provided counsel with a schedule of fees that was specifically identified for munitions sales. You also need to remember that when we go through munitions sale, the attorney's fees and court costs get added to the proceeds. So, you know, and I can tell you, as of today, we took action against someone, and those. The obligation to the town of Smyrna is unpaid taxes, unpaid interest and charges, the filing fee, the attorney's fee, and I don't know whether that got to the sheriff's sale fee or not. But so we do ultimately recover those costs as part of a munitions sale.
But we have that to deal with. But if we go with Global, it doesn't cost us anything. They just have to pay up before they can do something else.
They still get bankrupt. They still
got to go. Yeah, or decide they're not going to do business in Smyrna.
They're
not going
to do anything.
And in which case, yeah, their interest still accrues, but they may never, you know, they may not come back. That's the.
Which brings us to the question Barrett, Mr. Riddle posed. Is there any merit in trying to split the difference here with the developer? Is it all or nothing with a developer, or can we say owning more than two lots will allow you to do certain things?
Meaning, if the developer owes more on more than two lots, or if they have more than two that they're currently developing?
If they owe on more than two.
If they owe on more, I mean, we can certainly put something together and look at it. I think this is probably similar to what Mr. Hug suggested of, you know, a phase. You know, you can make sure that they have clean hands with regard to a specific phase. Mm-hmm. You know, that certainly, in some instances, could help. In some instances, it, you know, could certainly be detrimental. Remember, if there was an easy answer to this, we wouldn't still be here talking about this how many weeks later. I mean, these are difficult issues to grapple with. There's no doubt about that. There really isn't an easy answer.
And the reason I pose that is because I'm sensitive to what my colleagues, Mr. Rayner and that fellow down there,
Tony.
And Tony. And the point is well taken. The other thing is I read Grant's analysis with interest. And because I hadn't thought of some of those points, and I commend you for your in-depth analysis of that. So really, what we're talking about is a question of being pragmatic about the economics versus being sensitive to the taxpayer. And I want to be both, if that's possible. So I would lean towards. Somewhere in the middle with this to satisfy the point that we're not forcing people to just walk away from projects when there's a possibility they can finish them, even if it's builder A, B, or C building on another builder's property. But at the same time, I want to protect the taxpayers as well in terms of their individual home projects. And I presume that's possible.
You know, I mean, that's certainly something that, you know, we can discuss. So are you interested in saying that perhaps a developer needs to have clean hands, you know, with, I guess right at this point we kind of needed
a developer owns two or more properties. That's what we're talking about. Like, you know, we just want to protect the town citizen that owns his own private property. We don't want him going behind the bush, especially my bush, if it's open on property.
We're going to make sure everybody knows where your bush is.
Right.
And our sewage don't work.
That's what we're talking about. And, you know, and I agree 100% with what Larry said, that if we could do something like that, you know, where we're protecting the person that owns
where this would become effective if you had two or more lots?
Yeah, it becomes effective if we have
so
if
that
the developer has two or more lots.
So in effect, this wouldn't apply to any private citizens only owning one lot. Is that what's being proposed?
I mean, the proposal that I had offered earlier, that after we thought about it, may or may not apply, which was the current phase of a multi-phased project would probably provide for a number of developers the way to say, look, dude, if you've got 10 lots in phase two that you're working on, you better be paid up entirely on those 10 lots. We're not going to necessarily be concerned about the next five phases of your development, which may not happen till, you know, 2015, but you've got to be up on that current phase. The difficulty is in those developments where there is no specific phase, and you may want to consider, you know, that if you own five or more lots in, you know, any development in town, that you have to be current on at least those five, or some combination that says, you know, you're not going to be able to just, you know, nibble away at us one at a time and get away from ever having to pay your taxes, even if they are eventually due, and still have some fairness to the individual property owner out there who's struggling to pay their property taxes.
How would you work out something with the individual Mr. and Mrs. Citizen, supposing they have that problem? Do they have to, can they come in and the town will work with them or something or they have to pay their taxes up?
You know, I think this would be very similar to munition proceedings we're talking about. I mean, someone who owes back taxes, the town doesn't automatically send the property to sheriff's cell, you know. From what I understand, the town's always certainly willing to work with individuals. That's kind of a last-case scenario, you know. When you talk about someone who has a plumbing issue and you don't want them going in the bush behind the house, I mean, that would just be something, you know, an emergency situation. You know, if you wanted, perhaps we could consider putting in, you know, some type of emergency provision in here where, you know, the town has discretion, you know, to work with individuals or something like that, so you don't put the individual citizen in a hardship. I mean, but going back just to the munition proceedings, you know, the town has the discretion to work with individuals and try to make things work. And so I think that here, you know, if you were to pass this, either way, you know, the town would have the ability to exercise the discretion to, you know, whether it's a payment plan or, you know, we'll issue this contingent on a payment plan being enacted. I mean, you know, the town, you know, especially if we wanted to, again, try to rework some of the language in this, you know, there could be some flexibility built into this so that you don't have people just automatically shut up the cold.
I don't want to see Mr. you know, Mr. Wilson here, who needs his roof done, you know, can't get his roof done because he owes back taxes, and not like 2 years worth of back taxes. That's good. I'm glad. But, you know, just recently, you know, maybe he's 3 months late on his taxes and he's, you know, getting it together for whatever reason, but that he needs a new roof and we can't give him a new roof. He won't allow the contractor to get the permit to do the roof because he owes back taxes. And I can't see where the town wouldn't say, okay, well, let's, on individual basis, work something out. Most people say, I want to work something out before they say, forget it.
Well, then the whole thing maybe needs to be split. Maybe there should be two different altogether because that's his residence where he's living.
He doesn't own anything else.
And you're talking about a developer that it's not their residence, it's their investment, it's income. So it's two different, we're talking about entirely two different things here.
I wouldn't
say the ordinance seems to be too broad in trying to draw everything in, and I don't see a way of doing that. and doing, you know, taking care of that contractor and then taking care of the little guy.
And then what are we going to do about when there's the appeals day and the contractors come in and they, because they haven't developed anything, they don't want to pay full price for their investment. They come in and they hit us up on that. I mean, as you saw the last time, there were quite a few lots out there that only had taxes like $13 and something on them. So are we going to give them that too?
Is it possible to say maybe single property owners, like I only own one piece of property, and then multiple property owners such as landlords or development owners such as the developer, so that, you know, I mean, can we say that? Can we say on single homeowners, we can use that discretion? If you're a landlord, then, you know, everything else has to be up to code or...
Two or more properties. That's all you got to say. I own three properties in Smyrna. I should be held liable to pay all the taxes. Valerie owns one property.
Before you go get another one.
Or before, you know.
What were you saying? Step up to the microphone.
I'm not allowed to speak.
We're giving you permission.
Invite from Bon Air.
He's on planning, and are you on Board of Adjustments?
If you made it for the individual homeowner, repair to plumbing, or reconstruction, putting a new roof on, and let that go for the individual homeowner, then do whatever you want to do with the outside contractor. That would eliminate him from having to pay his back taxes so he can get a new roof on. Okay.
What took you so long?
There's a motion on the floor.
Just in all honesty, that is something that we certainly would have to look into just on our end. That's something we'd have to research, whether, you know, it could just, you know, be one standard for the residents versus one standard for developers, just, you know, under equal protection.
Two or more properties.
You know, there has to be some amount of discretion and fairness across the board. You know, even as I was saying, you know, you could have some discretion, you know, working with people. You know, you still have to apply the ordinances fairly to everyone. You know, you can't be singling people out. And so if the council chose to go in a direction like that, that's something we'd have to certainly research to see if that would be feasible.
Even if the wording didn't say single property, but only said, like the gentleman said, emergency repair work? You took that two or more properties out of it. You kept what you had here, but added emergency repair work being exempted.
I wouldn't have any problems with that if we exempted emergency repair work.
And that would take care of the
business development.
Sewer backing up and the roof leaking and
reworking.
But that would be for everybody.
Send it to them, but
what would that be for?
A contractor.
Really affect the homeowner, not.
Yeah. How would that affect the new contractor?
Yeah, it really wouldn't affect the developer or contractor.
He started a house and had problems with it and didn't finish it and wanted to move on to another one.
His code wouldn't be up to date because it wouldn't be finished, so then he wouldn't be able to. Because they have to have all their codes up to date, correct? Every other piece of property, did we discuss that already? Every piece of property that they would own.
If they have code violations, the code violations have to be correct.
Code violations have to be up to date, but taxes don't.
It's really the taxes. It's the taxes and liens that are associated with taxes that we're actually having a discussion about. Code violations have to be resolved. That's not a problem. So that would get you your landlords and your developer who sort of walked away with a house with no doors or something. But the taxes and tax liens are things that would be. But also the defaults of contracts and things like that would have to be resolved. So basically the issues I think that we're debating are how to deal with primarily with the outstanding taxes on developed versus undeveloped properties in a large extent. You look as confused as I do now, Barry.
I feel like we're back to full circle after however long this has been.
We are.
I mean, this... I guess, you know, one of the things perhaps that would be good is just to figure out, you know, just going back to the beginning of what do we want to accomplish with this? Is this to make sure that we have people that are, you know, dealing straightforward with the town? Is it to make is this going to be a method to, you know, collect on back taxes to make sure that ordinance code violations are corrected? You know, is that something the town wants to use this as a tool for? Because it certainly does that as it's written. But this, under this ordinance as written, you'd have to be completely current on your taxes, on your, you know, no code violations, not in violation with any contract with the town. And so just that's what you'd have to be. I mean, basically you've got to be
clean.
Current with everything.
Clean.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it says,
I mean,
clean
yeah.
hands.
Yep.
Okay. Where did this come from? Let's go back to the beginning, because Tony was discussing this. Where did this come from?
This is an issue that, as I recall, originally was brought up at the Business Development Committee 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half, quite a long time ago, and we had gotten a copy of Seaford's ordinance, which is the one that seemed to us to be the most well written
has it ever gone to a committee? Has it gone to a committee? Where did the paperwork come from? Just because I just recall Terry presenting it.
I think the answer to your question is it gone to a committee. I'm not sure it's actually been officially reviewed by any committee. It's a potentially, I guess, the business finance-related issues are probably more closely a finance issue than business development or some other committee. You know, the ordinance was sort of resurrected from the discussion at the Business Development Committee.
So it's not a situation that you're worried about right now.
Well,
where did it come from, Grant?
Now, Grant got sucked in at the last minute to figure out what it would cost us. I'm pretty sure that the derivation of it was the Business Development Committee, and I know that at least one time it was discussed there. To answer whose ever question it was, are we concerned about it at the moment? You know, if we didn't do anything, then the status quo is that anybody could walk in and ask for a building permit, and as long as they had enough money to fill out the permit application form, they would get their building permit and they would proceed with their development process, and they may be the most honest, straightforward person or the biggest scoundrel that we've dealt with, and there would be no distinction.
If we accept it now, we can go back and make changes.
I think from all the discussion, if you're sort of asking me for a recommendation, I would suggest you table it and let Barrett and I see if we can figure out sort of where to start again on this sort of circle.
A couple of the council people have suggested maybe getting
There have been some good suggestions tonight,
and
I think that maybe that maybe there's, you know, kind of somehow taking the two or more lots with the notion of emergency repair into consideration. That I mean, there are property owners. There is a reasonable list of property owners of single-family residential home-owned properties in town that owe us taxes. And in some cases, we're aggressively trying to collect them if they're a large amount. And in some cases, we're sending them a reminder letter periodically saying, by the way, you know, don't forget you owe us taxes from 08 and 09 or whatever the case might be. And eventually, those will get addressed either when the property is sold or as a result of an owner stepping forward and saying, hey, can I work out a payment plan? Or in rare cases, will they actually get as far as munition sale? And we have a number of developers in the same kind of situation, and we've been in contact with all of them saying, you know, you better pay up or else. And one did, and one hasn't, and one said he would, and one skipped town. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. I would rather you not pass an ordinance than pass one that you're this uncomfortable with, to be totally blunt about it. I'd rather just say, you know, time out, let's just let this lie and figure out whether it's worth worrying about, you know, either next week or some months from now.
Madam Mayor, would you be willing to withdraw your motion?
I will withdraw my motion and make another motion to table it.
And withdraw the second.
Okay, withdraw the second.
Will you second the table? I'll make a
motion that we table it.
And you're seconding my motion.
Oh, okay.
You made a motion to table
to
it.
Call okay. Organize confusion.
I'll commit Barrett because Terry's not here to defend him. We will attempt in the next 2 weeks to see if we can bring some additional direction around this, and if we don't feel comfortable, I may suggest to you at that time that we withdraw this ordinance completely and maybe finance or somebody wants to take another shot at it, but that would be my recommendation.
Okay, so we have a motion to table in a second. Any further discussion?
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Councilman Thornton.
Aye.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilman Loy.
Aye.
Councilman DeFeo.
Aye.
Mayor Stondahl.
Aye.
Councilman Raina.
Aye.
Thank you.
Yeah, I lost my paperwork.
And I apologize that this is a very tough question to come to resolution.
Okay, 8B, second reading, ordinance number 008-09, chapter 1, general provision, section 1.14. Oops, wait a minute. That's the one we just tabled.
Yeah, you just tabled that one.
Okay, so 8C, third reading, ordinance number 006-09, chapter 50, solicitor's ordinance. We're going to do these separate.
Madam Mayor, if I can speak to this. At your place tonight, you got the updated version that was discussed at the last Public Safety Committee meeting. And I apologize for you not getting it earlier, but on page 2, you'll notice there's a highlighted area that was changed regarding organizations authorized by the within the Smyrna School District that are exempt from this ordinance. On page 3, issuing of licenses upon registering with the town shall have 24 hours, excluding weekends and holidays, to determine whether to issue a license. That gives the town a period of time to look into the background of the individual solicitors that are applying for permits. And on page 5, the original ordinance called from dusk till dawn, and dusk is a very elusive term, so the solicitor suggested we use the time frame of 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. prevailing time. Those are the only changes that were made to the original ordinance, and again, at the last meeting, I had indicated that the changes were discussed at the Public Safety Committee meeting, and they were endorsed by the Public Safety Committee as well as the solicitor through suggestion. So those are the only changes that were made to the original ordinance.
I would remind council that this ordinance, the third reading of this ordinance, needs to be done tonight. This is the last night that this matter can actively be considered without being reintroduced.
I make a motion that we adopt ordinance number 006-09, chapter 50, solicitor's ordinance.
I'll second.
Discussion. How are people going to know about this?
I'm sorry?
How are people going to know about this?
Well, it will be advertised as part of our ordinances. Also, our plan would be to put signs at the entrance to town indicating that peddler's permits are required.
You're going to put signs.
That's normally how that's done. Would also be on the website indicating both the adoption of the ordinance and that solicitor's registration or whatever is required. Seconded.
Could there be a consideration that there would be one warning?
Enforcement purposes, an officer's not going to make an arrest. He walks up to someone who doesn't have a license. He's going to instruct them where to go to get the license.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? Roll call.
Councilman Thornton.
Aye.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilman White.
Aye.
Councilman DeFeo.
Aye.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Aye.
Councilman Raynor.
Aye.
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Motion accepted. Okay, ordinance number 009-09, Chapter 70, Utilities, Article 3, Electric Rules and Regulations Reference Fees.
This is the third reading of this ordinance. It removes the last remaining code-based fee provisions as relate to utility services. If you remember, this ordinance was reviewed and recommended by the utility committee when it came to council originally. You asked that I submit a copy of the fee schedule to you, which I did. It is now ready for third and final reading. This ordinance has to be adopted no later than the next council meeting if for any reason you feel any reason to want to consider it longer. But.
Is there a motion?
Move that we adopt ordinance number 009-09, Utilities Article 3, Electric Rules Regulations Regarding Fees as the third reading.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilwoman White.
No.
Councilman DeFeo.
Aye.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Aye.
Councilman Rayner.
Aye.
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Councilman Thornton.
Aye.
Motion accepted. Appointments, Election Registration Board. There is one position that's still open. It is an alternate position. It doesn't have any effect on the election or anything at this point. But if anyone knows of someone that would like to serve on the election board, if you would please get their resume and get their name and phone number and email to me, I'd appreciate it. Assessors, I received a mission statement. Again, this is a realtor, which I personally like realtors being assessors. I want somebody to assess my house that knows what they're doing. So I got I read her name the last time, Deborah Adams, and she works for Delaware Homes. No, I'm sorry. She works for ProVast Realty here in Smyrna. Has a Wilmington address on it because that's their main office, but they have an office here in Smyrna also. She hasn't been able to come to the last meeting or this one because of a job that she has. So you have her information. I know I just passed it out now. Would you feel comfortable voting with it? James has been on me about getting these assessors appointed. So it's up to council. Do you want to vote on it tonight, or do you want to wait until next meeting?
Mayor, do you know if she lives in Smyrna?
Yes, she does. Our charter reads that the assessors have to domicile in the town limits.
I will move that we accept Deborah Adams as an assessor.
I'll second that.
Discussion?
Councilman White?
No.
Councilman DeFeo?
Aye.
Mayor Stombaugh?
Aye.
Councilman Rayner?
Aye.
Councilman Riddle?
Aye.
Councilman Thornton?
Aye.
Councilman Evans?
Aye.
Motion accepted. 8E, lowering of Lake Como to...
Madam Mayor, the code of the town of Smyrna in section 46-76 addresses the manner and timing of lowering of Lake Como, and it reads in particular, the town shall open the floodgates of the Lake Como Dam to lower the waters of Lake Como to allow inspection, maintenance, construction, cleanup, and other similar work by owners of property on Lake Como no more often than once every 5 years, commencing November 1st, 1995. So this 2010 would be the year in which we would otherwise provide for lowering the lake. We usually do it in the late fall, early winter, which is the time that the Denrec Fish and Wildlife folks have historically recommended. I don't believe we lowered it in 2005, Daryl? No. So it's been, it will have been 10 years at least since the lake has actually been lowered for this purpose. We do have the authority to lower the lake for, you know, other purposes, you know, with notice, basically, if we have some, you know, some reason for maintaining the spillway or the dam or what have you. We've had inquiries from two property owners, not necessarily, and they may correct me, one of them is sitting over here, not necessarily requesting that the lake be lowered, but asking if we, in fact, intend to do so, and if so, when we intend to do it. There is no particular provision in the ordinance that says we have to be, you know, solicited by two or more or five or more or ten or more or whatever of the owners of property on the lake. But there are some specific provisions that we need to give notice by posting, publication, mailing, and I guess that's it, posting, publication, and mailing to the general public and to the property owners if we intend to do so. So recognizing that even though it's only February, by the time we met all these provisions and provided 90 days notice, and if we were to do it, say, in October, we wouldn't be too terribly long before we'd be up against that limitation.
And from what I understand, Brooks Fanta. He had come before council and asked us not to do this, but I understand he's withdrawn.
That's my understanding, is he's withdrawn that request. Normally, the lake takes what, Daryl, you know this much better than I do, what the normal turnaround time for the lake is. So it's, you know, it's lowered and it's down for a significant period of time even after we, typically we, according to the ordinance, unless the council determines that there will be a longer period, the lowering takes place for a period of up to 30 consecutive days, and then we shut the gates, and then it takes typically another month or so for the water level to fully restore. The lake is never totally dry at that time. It is, there are active springs, and there is an active, the deeper portions of the lake do maintain water, and so there's that, you know, fish habitat and what have you, but it does expose the bottom for, you know, people to get to their bulkheads. The other reason I think we do it in the wintertime is just because it's, you know, it's not a time of active recreation use, and if there's any decaying materials or whatever, they don't, you know, it's not summertime. So I really need some direction from council if we wish to proceed, or if you want to send us to some committee, that's fine. But
is there a motion?
I'll make a motion that we don't lower the lake.
Is there a second?
Second.
Discussion? Roll call?
Councilman DeFeo?
Wait a second. I'm stalled on the discussion part. Why don't you want to lower the lake, if you mind me asking that?
Because really nobody asked for it.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah, somebody did. Two people asked for it.
Yeah, but one was an inquiry. I told him. No, it's if they want to, go ahead. But I don't see any need for it. Most people that have docks have them in there now, and if anyone has any request for it, if they had an emergency, they could lower it too. But I don't see what it would be.
You do have one property owner who has at least asked about it. It's Conrad.
You have to come to the microphone and give your...
Yeah, come on up to the microphone.
It's recorded.
Get up there.
Come on.
No, we can't talk.
No, that. Conrad, you do have to come to the microphone, please.
You're buying tomorrow morning.
Yeah, right.
My name's Conrad Hebert, 693 Lake Drive West. How many requests is needed to lower the lake? One, two, three. There's
Mr.
75
Hux,
people live on that lake.
There is no number given in the ordinance.
All right.
So one person.
I'm asking for it to be lowered. Another fellow's asking for it to be lowered.
He's not here.
He's already phoned it in.
He phoned a friend.
Thank you.
So I want the lake lowered as per ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They don't believe me. You have to, you know, I'm told. They don't believe me. They don't believe me when people call me.
Are they coming back?
Only if you lower the lake.
I just have one more question. Just out of curiosity on my part. Would it be better, I mean, I know it's hard to do repairs now. I mean, would you prefer to do, my thought is if we lowered the lake like, say, March, and then April showers, is it going to fill up faster than if we do it in the fall?
Probably not. It'll just lower it more.
Forget it. Forget it.
I think
whenever you do, it's fine.
If it hadn't been lowered for 10 years, I think there's probably some people on the lake probably don't even realize their bulkheads need fixing. But if it hadn't been lowered for 10 years, I think it should be lowered and, you know, be advertised in the paper, I guess.
Yeah, the ordinance provides that we have to. In fact, let me read that carefully just so you all are aware.
And while you're looking that up, will you withdraw your motion?
No. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to get sucked into a job with this guy.
No.
Yeah, we have to give notice at town hall and at the entrance to the beach at least 90 days in advance. Publish a notice in newspaper general circulation at least once a month for 2 months, and provide written notice to the last known address of each property owner whose lands abut the lake. So yeah, there is a fairly rigorous notice process that. I mean, we would do the written notice by door hangers or something, but yeah, we do have to give notice.
And we did talk to the other night when the people from the lake were here. We did discuss it, and I think they did want it lowered, right? Wasn't that the general consensus?
Consensus I got from, I mean, there wasn't any vote or action or anything.
Mr. Hugg, does the motion need to carry the date?
Sorry?
Does the motion need to carry the date?
To lower it?
According to the resolution, the resolution does need to carry the date.
Since I haven't seen one since I've been here, as I understand the usual process is we determine the actual date to lower it after discussions with the Division of Fish and Wildlife, because there's some timing issue with waterfowl and fish that we have to avoid. It's typically the fall, typically late fall. Yeah, but I don't know that.
I'll make a motion that we go ahead and proceed and make plans to lower the lake in fall of 2010 as agreed upon with DENREC.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Roll call.
Councilman DeFeo.
Aye.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Aye.
Councilman Rayner.
Aye.
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Councilman Thornton.
Aye.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilman White.
Aye.
Motion accepted. 8F, paddle boat proposal.
Aaron Weisenberger has been sitting very quietly and patiently over here on the second row. Last Thursday night, we had a public meeting downstairs in the conference room. I think there were a little over a dozen folks who attended, property owners along the lake, in response to the notice the town sent out. As you recall, the recommendation that came out of the Finance Committee was that we provide an opportunity for residents to come and ask questions and talk about the proposal. And I think Aaron did an adequate job addressing those questions and comments. And if I can report on that meeting, the consensus of the folks that were present at least was to allow Mr. Weisenberger to go forth and. That's right. It was in this room. We moved it upstairs. Never mind. All right. It's been a long week. So really, the issue comes back to council. The important consideration is whether council wishes to enter into a concession agreement with Aaron Weisenberger for purposes of rental of paddle boats, kayaks, and possibly canoes at Lake Como during the late spring, summer, and early fall. And if council is so inclined to do that, then the next step in the process is that Aaron and I actually sit down and draft an agreement that we bring back to council for your ratification. But before we do any more of that, we need an action by council, either saying yes or no.
Is there a motion?
I move that Mr. Hug enter in negotiations with Mr. Weisenberg. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Concerning
Battleshack, yes.
Battleshack concerning concessions at Lake Como for the coming season.
Second.
I believe Ms. White seconded first.
Yeah, Ms. White seconded.
Yeah, Councilwoman White did the second.
White seconded.
I'm sorry.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Is there any discussion?
Well, that's part of the negotiation. Aaron, did you want to say anything tonight, or are you just comfortable? Okay. Yeah. Part of our negotiations will be to, he made me a sort of low-ball offer. I'll make him a very high-ball offer, and we'll find some place in between, I suspect.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Aye.
Councilman Rayner.
Aye.
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Councilman Gordon.
Aye.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilman White.
Aye.
Hi.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll talk when you about when you can. Yeah, give me a call. Thank you.
Okay. Under new business 9A, recommendation of safe public safety committee resolution reference stop signs on Bonnier Lane at Sack Street.
Madam Mayor, I'll report on this if it's okay. The public safety committee, for several times. I've been approached by residents of Bonnier concerning safety issues in the community with regard to driver safety. And they had requested a stop sign be placed on Bonnier Drive or Bonnier Lane.
Two stop signs
at Sachs Street, making it a three-way intersection. The public safety committee directed the chief to have some analysis done of that area, and in terms of speed, accident pictures, and so forth. With respect to accident pictures, there were no collisions reported, but there was an issue with speed in that area. And even though stop signs are not used ordinarily for speed control, there is an issue, a definite issue, of people turning off of Sack Street onto Bonnier. So the Public Safety Committee voted and recommended that two stop signs be placed on either side of Sack Street on Bonnier Lane. And you have a resolution before you.
I'll make a motion to accept that resolution.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call.
Councilman Rayner.
Aye.
Councilman Riddle.
Aye.
Councilman Thornton.
Aye.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilwoman White.
Aye.
Councilman DeFeo.
Aye.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Aye. Motion accepted. 9B, refer to Planning and Zoning Commission Ordinance Number 008-10, Appendix B, Subdivision and Land Development Reference Commercial Surety Bond.
Chair recommended it.
You have in your packet a proposed ordinance and a copy of an email from Mr. J. Work's office regarding this subject. A number of years ago, the town used to accept commercial surety bonds as one of the approved forms of surety for subdivision completion and improvement. I don't recall the exact history of why that was stricken, but the sureties that are now available are a letter of credit and a mortgage. And I'm not sure whether maybe a third one.
Cash.
Yeah, good old cash. The difficulty is that with all the changes in the banking community and in commercial financing, relatively few projects now are being financed or secured, I guess, by even letters of credit with a bank. And the commercial surety is becoming the sort of instrument of normal practice. Unfortunately, we don't have the authority now to accept a commercial surety, and that's creating a lot of difficulty for a number of the projects that are proposed to move forward in the town. I'm looking at the ordinances. We only accept right now cash, certified check, a first lien mortgage, or a letter of credit. And this ordinance would do is add to that list a commercial surety in a form acceptable to the to the town tied to a form of bond that would accompany it. Because this amendment to the subdivision land development ordinance, it needs to go to planning and zoning, and then they would have a hearing and it would come back to you for action. So I would ask that it be sent to planning and zoning.
Okay, is there a motion?
Move that we refer to Planning and Zoning Commission Ordinance Number 008-10, Appendix B, Subdivision and Land Development Regarding Commercial Surety Bonds.
I'll second.
Discussion? Roll call.
Councilman Riddell.
Aye.
Councilman Thornton.
Aye.
Councilman Evans.
Aye.
Councilman White.
Aye.
Councilman DeFeo.
Aye.
Mayor Stombaugh.
Aye.
Councilman Rayner.
Aye.
Motion accepted. Other council business, I would just like to thank the town's maintenance department, Public Works. I think you did a wonderful job with the snow removal, and looks like you might get another chance.
Thanks a lot.
But,
two more chances.
The roads were coming into town. It was very nice coming into town. You did an excellent job. Thank you very much. Is there any other council business? Okay. 11, is there a motion to go into executive session for A, to consider a personal matter in which the names, competency, and abilities of an individual employee will be discussed, and B, to consider the personal matter in which names, competency, and abilities of an individual employee will be discussed, police chief evaluation.
Madam Mayor, I second that motion.
Who made the motion?
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
At 9:16.
What's that?
You've got red and white striped mints. What more do you want?
Make a motion to come out of executive session.
Second.
Is that a motion?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
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 I make a motion that we direct Mr. Hug to schedule an executive session for the next regular council meeting to satisfy a personnel issue.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Motion accepted.
Two real quick items. Just one, remind everybody that we have a special council meeting next Monday night at 7 o'clock. It's a special meeting of council. And secondly, just FYI, I received notice tonight of the Smyrna Police Employees Association's appeal of a decision by the chief regarding an interpretation of the amount of funds to be paid to an officer who retired for his unused sick leave. I will be bringing that to council, and you'll need to hold a hearing on that matter within 30 days, which is March 16th. So.
I have one last thing just for council's information. Most exciting thing that I've had happen since I've been elected mayor. I've been asked to come to Dover Air Force Base on Friday, and I'm going to be inducted into the Air Force as an honorary commander of the 514 Wing. Very
nice. Very nice. Congratulations. Did it say
inducted or drafted?
Inducted. No. And then on the 18th and 19th.
Welcome.
and what they want us to do is they want to, we're elected officials, become more familiar with what the service does, but they also have asked us if we will include the commander in the activities of the town. Different things that happened in Japan, like the July parade and things like that. And then the 18th and 19th, there's a trip to Atlanta. hurricane hunters, and I to show us their airplanes and everything. And I said, well, I don't want to fly into a hurricane. They're like, no, we're not going to do that.
He's scheduled next Monday. Yeah. Next Monday, he must not. That's not mine flying into hurricane.
He's quick.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
No move.
Okay.
Somebody.
I can't. He said that, and I'll give Councilman White a second.
Okay. That works for me. Okay. Works for me.
Yeah. Good time.
Keep our information.